All right, hear the word of the Lord from Isaiah 41, verses 1 through 20. Listen to me in silence, O coastlands, let the peoples renew their strength. Let them approach, then let them speak. Let us all draw near together for judgment. Who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step? He gives up nations before him, so that he tramples kings underfoot. He makes them like dust with his sword, like driven stubble with his bow. He pursues them and passes on safely by paths that his feet have not trod. Who has performed and done this, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, the first and with the last, I am he. The coastlands have seen and are afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near and come. Everyone helps his neighbor and says to his brother, be strong. The craftsman strengthens the goldsmith, and he who smooths with the hammer, him who strikes the anvil, saying of the soldering, it's good. And they strengthen it with nails so that it cannot be moved. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob whom I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend, you whom I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corners, saying to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Behold, all who are incensed against you shall be put to shame and confounded. Those who strive against you shall be as nothing and shall perish. You shall seek those who contend with you, but you shall not find them. Those who war against you shall be as nothing at all. For I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not. I am the one who helps you. Fear not, you worm, Jacob, you men of Israel. I am the one who helps you, declares the Lord. Your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I make of you a threshing sledge, new, sharp, having teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and crush them. You shall make the hills like chaff. You shall winnow them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the tempest shall scatter them. And you shall rejoice in the Lord. In the Holy One of Israel you shall glory. When the poor and needy seek water and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers on the bare heights and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. I will put in the wilderness the cedar, the acacia, the myrtle, and the olive. I will set in the desert the cypress, the plane, and the pine together, that they may see and know, may consider and understand that the hand of the Lord has done this. The Holy One of Israel has created it. That is the reading of God's holy word. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of God stands forever. May it speak deeply to our hearts. When I was in seminary, I went to seminary a million years ago, back when I was a young man, and it was in Jackson, Mississippi. And Jackson, Mississippi is, of course, a very southern place, and we kind of got into the southern history thing while I was there. And a friend of mine, Robbie Hinton, just went crazy over Stonewall Jackson and Stonewall Jackson biographies, which you don't see a lot of that out here, but there, that's very common. And he was reading, he'd just gotten his third Stonewall Jackson biography. And he was talking about it all week, how he was just going to plow into it over the weekend. And so, we went home on Friday, and he, in seminary, you know, this is fun. It's about the most fun you can afford, reading a book all weekend. And so, you know, he went and jumped into his book, and we got back to school on Monday, and I saw him. I said, so, did you finish your biography? And he said, nope. I said, really? Why not? And he said, well, I've read the first, 600 pages, but I got to where we were about to read about his death, and I just couldn't stand to have him die again, so I closed the book and put it on the shelf. You know, I remember having that feeling as a kid, realistically, like something bad's about to happen in a book, and I would just shut it. I'm going to stop this from happening. And lately, I kind of feel that way when I read the newspaper. You know, I just want to shut it. Matter of fact, I think I subconsciously read the news like that every day. Full disclosure, I don't read the paper. I read Google News, but same concept, right? And I just kind of read until I have had all the bad news I can handle, and I shut it, and we move on. That's what it feels like, you know. In this last week, what are some of the things that happened? Last night, suicide bombings in Afghanistan, attacks in Syria and Pakistan. A Christian girl has been arrested for defiling the Quran. And in the United States, a school shooting in Baltimore last week. Over 50 people have been shot in Chicago in the last 30 days. It goes on and on, and we just shut it. Scary, really. And for most of us, for me included, the really scary stuff happens closer to home. Sending your kids to school and they're afraid. They're going to new buildings and they're in big crowds of people they don't know. And your daughter gets laughed at for what she looks like one day. Your son is made fun of for what he's done on the playing field. A bad grade threatens to send you home from college. And you get scared. We get scared. I confess that I lived much of my life afraid. Afraid of guilt, afraid of shame, afraid of pain. It's what drives me. I started out raising children, parenting out of fear. If there was a book called Parenting Out of Fear, I could write it. And I can tell you every pothole you fall into. You get afraid that your children are not going to like you, so you spoil them and you make them into princesses and princes. Or you get afraid that you're going to spoil them and you're going to overindulge them and they're going to be weak, and so you over-discipline them. And then you get afraid that you've done both, and so you go back and forth like a pendulum, and your kids have no idea what to expect when they get home that day. And fear, it's all up in us. It drives us. The what-if monster starts to attack. What if my company lays me off? What if I don't get another job? What if I don't get a job to begin with? What if I don't make the grades I'm supposed to make? What if I never get married? What if my children don't turn out? The what if, what if, what if? And into that fear and into that nervousness, the Lord speaks to us. And He says to us, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed. The New American Standard Version translates that verse in such a beautiful way. It says, do not look around you nervously. Isn't that a great picture? Do not look around you nervously. Don't look at all the things that might happen. Don't look at what everybody else is doing. Don't look at all the bad things that are going on out there. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. Do not look around you anxiously, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. The Lord speaks that to us today, and I want that to just get deep within your subconscious. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. So let's go through this text. I want you to kind of explain what's happening in it, because I want it to affect you deeply. What's happening? God is drawing all the nations together. He is calling a court. He's basically summoning them. It's funny. I don't know if you've ever had jury duty in Oklahoma. I've only had it in Oklahoma. I've never had it anywhere else. I had my first shot at jury duty last week. And about a month ago, you know, I get the summons in the mail. And it's very intimidating, actually. Because there on the sheet of paper, it says, you are summoned and commanded to appear, which is redundant. I guess they don't think we know what summoned means, which is probably necessary. But, you know, you are summoned and commanded to appear. It's like, okay, I guess I'll be there. And that's what God is doing here. He is drawing all peoples together. It's a courtroom scene, and he is saying, let's gather together. And it's not really an option. No, we're going to do it. And we're going to compare, let all the peoples renew their strength. Buck yourself up. Toughen up. Come on. Let them approach. Let them speak. Let us draw together in judgment. And then he drops this little bit of news on them. He says, that conqueror that you're all so afraid of, Cyrus of Persia, I'm doing that. He says, who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step? He gives up nations before him so that he tramples kings underfoot. He makes them like dust with his sword, like driven stubble with his bow. Who has performed and done this, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, the first and the last, I am he. That person who is coming, who is going to conquer, who is going to completely upheave all your life, who's going to make everything chaos for you, who's going to take away your defenses and make you feel completely vulnerable, I'm doing it. I'm doing that. What is your plan? He makes sure that you realize that he is the one that is calling everything into existence. He is the first. He is with the last. He just puts that exclamation point down. I am he. Now, Cyrus wasn't Genghis Khan. He wasn't, you know, awful. He wasn't the worst conqueror to ever live. He was not Adolf Hitler. But he was a conqueror. He destroyed kings. He took people into exile. He wasn't really a lot of fun. He took away all security. And he's telling us, God is here telling us that he is behind the conquests of history. He's at work. He delivers this frightening news. He calls everybody together into the courtroom. And then he says, okay, that thing that you fear that might happen one day, here it comes. What are you going to do? And so we see how the unbelievers respond to it in furious futility. The coastlands have seen and they're afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near and come. And so everyone helps his neighbor and says to his brother, be strong. We see all these nations coming together going, patting each other on the back. Be strong. You're tough. You're going to be all right. We can get through this. We can stop him. So what are they going to encourage each other to do? They're going to encourage each other to make their idols better. They all go after these things that they worship, and they're going to improve them. And if they get their idol just right, then they're going to be safe. So what happens? The craftsman strengthens the goldsmith. Man, you're the best goldsmith. You make the best idols. Yeah, yeah, I do. And he who smooths with the hammer is looking at the one who's striking with the anvil going, you can do it. You can make us an idol that's going to rescue us. And they say of the soldering, it's good. And they strengthen it with nails. And Isaiah, and God speaking through Isaiah, brings all his sarcasm into this one sentence. It cannot be moved. You've exerted all your strength. You've done everything there is to do that you can do so that you can produce something that can't even move. That's awesome. They were so dumb. We don't do that at all, do we? When we have bad news out there, when there's things that we're afraid of, when that anxiety is building up in our stomach, we never go back to those same old things that have failed us time and again. Do we? Ever? We never say just kind of silly, inane things like, You're going to be all right. You're strong. It's sad. You know, I want this in no way to sound like I'm laughing, because I'm not. It's truly heartbreaking and heart-wrenching to deal with unbelievers who do not know Jesus, who are not reconciled to the God of the universe, when they have terrible news in front of them. I mean, I'll never forget going into the hospital room of a family member who'd just been diagnosed with cancer, and she was going to die, and she did die, and her mantra was, "We are tough. We can handle this." And I really wish I'd just been honest enough to go, "No, you can't. You can't." But we always go back to those inane sayings, "Time heals all wounds." No, it doesn't. "I'm resilient. I'm going to come back from this." Probably not. Probably you won't come back. This scene kind of reminds me of the movie Titanic. And I don't, not much reminds me of that movie. Probably the cheesiest thing I've ever sat through. But if you saw it, some of y'all were very young. Some of you were not born when it came out. But there's a scene in it, you know, when the ship has hit the iceberg, they're going down, and you got the good guys, you know, who are going to do whatever they have to do to survive. They're going to go down with the ship. And you have the bad guys. You know, do y'all remember this at all? And you have, you know, this wealthy guy and his bodyguard, and they're looking at each other, and one of them says, "I don't believe in luck. I'm not going to let luck determine whether I live or not." And the other one says, "Yes, I always make my own luck." And he comes out with a stack of cash. You know, he's going to bribe his way onto a lifeboat. Like, somebody's going to go, "Oh, yeah, I'll die in the Arctic. That's better than, you know, this money's going to help that." I'm not exactly sure how he's going to buy his way onto the lifeboat. But, and the other guy pulls out a gun. And that's kind of, that's where we are. We go back to those things that have always worked for us. When the news is just too bad, when we can't control it, we go back to our escapist entertainment. We go and jump into sports. I remember one year, the year, I don't remember what year it was specifically. I could if I made myself. But my job was kind of falling apart. I wasn't doing a good job. My boss was getting fired. It was just in a complete flux. The family was kind of in flux. And it was March, and I know that because March Madness was on television, and I filled out 6 different NCAA basketball brackets. And I was just obsessed with it. My entire world was falling apart, but the only thing that I had the energy and the emotional capacity to care about was basketball. And I was terrible in all the brackets. You know, just going for those, just diving into those little things that we think we can control. We clean the house. We yell at our kids. "I can't make the world behave, but I can make you behave." And Isaiah tells us they're useless. They cannot tell the future. They cannot bring, they cannot summon conquerors, and they cannot move. And in the midst of that, God comes to us with this gracious command. It's a command. It's gracious, but it's a command. Listen to it. "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Don't look for something that's going to make you feel better. Look for something real, he says. "I am your God." And he doesn't just tell us not to be afraid, but he tells us why. And that's very important. God doesn't just give us commands. "Go do that." Especially hard ones like this. There are easy commands, I guess, you know. "Don't kill." I typically get through a day without breaking that one too often, you know. A few murders in my, you know, closet, but not too many. But, you know, the hard commands like, you know, "Don't worry, do not fear." Those are hard. And it's not fair just to come up and just kind of lay that one on somebody. I don't know, for those of y'all who remember September 11th, 2001, remember that was a bad day for a lot of us? And after the World Trade Centers had been hit and they were burning, I don't remember if it was before they fell or afterwards, but Rudy Giuliani, the mayor of New York at the time, had a press conference. Do y'all remember that? And he came out and he just kind of talked for, you know, kind of gave a little, we're going to get through this speech. And he said, the way you respond to terrorism is this. You just don't get scared. Just don't be afraid. And it was kind of rousing, but kind of dumb. You know, it's like, okay, can you give me a reason to not be afraid? Is there any, it would be okay if you said, don't be afraid. We know who did this and they're in custody. You know, don't be afraid. We're on it and it's not going to happen again. But just to kind of say, hey, just, I tell you what, just don't be afraid. I'm like, but I am afraid. You see the problem? And God, we want to look at God and go, okay, Lord, it's good that you say don't be afraid, but I just lost my job. It's okay that you say don't be afraid, but if I don't make a B+ at least, I'm going to lose my scholarship, and I don't know what happens then. Don't be afraid. Well, okay, Lord, but I don't want to be lonely. And I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I let this relationship fail. God doesn't just tell us not to be afraid. He says, don't be afraid, for I am your God. I am with you. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you. Let's look at the two reasons. The two reasons he gives us to not be afraid are because he is his character. He is God. And secondly, he is with us. You can think of it like this. Don't be afraid because of who he is and where he is. He is God and he is with us. First of all, don't be afraid because of God's character. He is the judge. He is the ultimate standard, the ultimate authority. Listen to me in silence, O coastlands. Only one person can say that. Only if he is above everything can he say that. He is the standard of what is right. And that is a hard thing for us to swallow. I live in fear because I'm very worried about what you think about me. I live in fear because I am worried that if you think I'm worried because if you think I'm a failure, I pretty much agree. And what he is saying is, he is the judge. He's the judge. He is the standard of what was right or wrong. It's his opinion we live for. And as we submit to that, we lose that fear. We no longer have to worry about what coworkers or colleagues will think. And we don't have to make compromises that we'll later regret. We don't have to be afraid because of his character as judge, and we're told not to fear because of God's character as ruler. Who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step? He gives up nations before him so that he tramples kings underfoot. God is saying, do not fear, for I am God. And even when your worst nightmare seems like it's coming true, I'm doing that. Okay? Now, it's time for big girl and big boy theology. All right? And that's what Isaiah gives you. And he comes at you with both hands. I mean, these texts are the sweetest, most encouraging texts in the Bible. He's talking about the gentleness of God. He will carry you in his bosom like a shepherd. And they are some of the harshest, I mean, horse pills to swallow kind of theology of, yes, Cyrus is coming and I'm bringing him. And we're just building up. I mean, if you haven't read Isaiah 45 in a while, just wait till you get there. And it is hard. And I don't mean for this to sound in any way less hard than it is. Okay? I have spent days this month in a funeral home. I'm with you. Okay, I am less than 20 days away from putting my sister in the ground. I get that this is hard. But God says, I'm bringing that. And our temptation is to say, oh, well, he just couldn't stop it. And as soon as we turn him into the God who just couldn't stop it, he is no longer helpful at all. Well, if he couldn't stop it, what good is he? And it is a big boy theology. I mean, it is hard. It is hard for us to say, God, you could have prevented all these broken hearts. You could have prevented all these tragedies, and you didn't. But it is a complete abandonment of faith to say you couldn't have stopped it. There is hope because he is writing a story that brings us to salvation and to redemption. And I want you to know, you can be honest with that. It's going to make you mad. It's going to make you, if you really embrace it, it may make you do things that you don't think are reverent. We'll get mad at him. But that's faith. Faith gets mad at God. Faith says, I'm really mad at you for letting my heart get broken. I'm mad at you for how you are directing history. But you see, that's still got God in the chair, right? He's still the judge. He's still the ruler. We're saying, we don't like it, but we know that you did it. If we do something else and kind of go, okay, I'm going to make you into somebody I like, you couldn't have helped that. You couldn't have, you couldn't have given me a better husband. You couldn't have possibly, dealt with my heartbreaks and my tragedies. Well, you're saying there's something else. There's another God out there bigger than him. And you've ditched the God of the Bible. And ultimately, there is no hope. You're just awash in a dark sea of fate. And that is not to be preferred, and it is not true. He is the ruler. He gives up nations before him. And he weeps with us over it, and we can trust him through it. This is not, he's not the cold, lifeless, angry, I'm going to send whatever I want to send God of Islam that you just have to bear with and submit to. He is the warm, true God of the tomb that came to the tomb of Lazarus and cried with us. He is the true God who in the garden who on the night before he was crucified got together with his disciples and he wept with them and he said, I know you're afraid. Believe in me. He is the true God who on the night before he went to the cross cried bitter tears and begged his own heavenly Father, isn't there any better way to do this? He knows our heartbreak. He is the true God who watched his son get handed over into evil hands and get tortured and crucified. He knows how it feels. And he is working to bring light and hope and salvation out of all that darkness. And from the moment that you embrace that truth, that he is the God who would rather go through darkness than just eradicate it. He is the God who's not going to give up on my marriage when I sin grievously. He is the God who's not going to give up on me when things turn terrible and it's my fault. Because he is a God who brings light and joy and hope out of darkness. That's what you get when you come and you receive the hope that Jesus brings. And that is infinitely better than just thinking that you're out there awash in fate. And ultimately there is no hope. He is the God who is with us. There's hope because of who God is. And finally, there's hope because of where God is. Look at his promises. Fear not, you worm Israel, he says. You are my servant. I have chosen you. I have not cast you off. Fear not, because you're my servant. You are my friend, he says. This text, when we hear the word servant in the Bible, our minds typically go to kind of a pre-Civil War South and slaves being beaten, and that's not the picture at all. The picture of the ancient Near East was that these servants would grow up within the household, and they would actually be heirs in cases where there wouldn't be a firstborn son or a son that was born. And they were dear, and you would send your servants out as envoys, as messengers, and anything, any insult received by the servant would be taken as an insult to the master. Anything done to him would be treated as a sin against the person who sent him. These messengers, these servants were loved dearly, and Jesus takes that to the farthest possible extent. You are my servant. You are my friend. And we know that whatever has been done to us was done to him. He's with us. And he's not just saying that in some kind of vague, unreal, fake way. I want you to get that, because it's so common in American language to say, you know, I'm with you, when we're not. I mean, not to pick on an easy target, but come on, preacher. Preachers pick on easier targets. That's what we do. At the Penn State football game yesterday, and they're all yelling, "We are Penn State!" You know, the guy came over, the announcer came over the intercom, and he said, "We want, if you don't know, if you've been living under a rock, Penn State had a former coach who was molesting children. Great evil was done there. And somehow they were allowed to keep a football program." And the commentator came over the intercom at the stadium, and he said, "We want the families of all the victims to know that our hearts are with them." "Let's go, Penn State!" And I was like, "No, you're not. Your hearts are not with them. Your hearts are scoring touchdowns. That's just an atrocious lie." And it's tempting for us to kind of bathe God's language in that foul lies that we speak. And when he says he's with you, we think, you know, when a friend of mine who, you know, gives me a long-distance phone call and says they're going through hard pain, and I say, you know, I'm with you. And then I hang up and I forget all about them. That is not how God is treating us. When he says he's with you, he kept that promise infinitely more than we would have ever hoped or imagined by coming and living our life alongside us and suffering everything that we have to suffer: poverty, heartbreak, being disdained, being shamed, being beaten, being alone. He suffered it all for us. And he told his disciples before Jesus went back into heaven, "I'm sending my spirit to be with you. I'm going to be present with you." How close was that? When the apostle Paul met Jesus on the road to Damascus, Jesus didn't say, "Why are you persecuting the church?" Jesus said, "Why are you persecuting me? Anything that is done to one of my people is done to me." God is saying, "I am with you, and I will strengthen you. I will strengthen you." I'm going to end here with this next to last promise. And he says, "Behold, I make you a threshing sledge." Imagine this now. You're the nation of Israel. You've just been told that you're going to go into exile. Cyrus is coming. You're basically you're feeling like just a speck of dust getting blown around by the wind. And he says, "I make of you a threshing sledge, new and sharp, having teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and crush them. You shall make the hills like chaff." Do not fear, God says. I am with you. I am your God, and I will help you. I will make you a threshing sledge. don't even know what that would look like. A big sledgehammer with teeth? That's just going to go through and crush mountains? And I want that to get into you. He is saying, I'm with you. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to strengthen you. I'm going to sustain you. Yes, I'm going to call you to go through bare times. I'm going to call you to go through hard days. But I'm going to be with you when you go through them. I will sustain you through them. And you, especially you as a community, you as a nation, you as a kingdom of God, you will win. And I want to focus on that. I know fear. This is not some kind of self-help seminar. Be like me. You know, I'm fearless. You go be fearless. I know fear. 7 years ago, I flew to Tulsa to start meeting people to plant a church. And I got off the airplane and I was able to get to my rental car. And I sat in the garage petrified with fear, unable to start it. But God comes to me and says, do not fear, I am with you. I will make you a threshing sledge. And one of the things that drives me crazy about Christians today is how much fear dominates our decisions and our life. I just see it everywhere, and I want to encourage you, don't let fear make your decisions for you. You know, in the political landscape, I hear people talking about how the government's going to ruin the church, which I just kind of find funny, honestly, because our government isn't efficient enough to ruin anything. Okay, I mean, it takes a certain level of efficiency to ruin things. You have to be able to get things done, right? And so there's this thought, and it's a very strong thought. It is absolutely rampant in my denomination that if homosexual marriage is allowed by the government, the church is done. And I just find that offensive. To the Lord of the universe. Really? You think all of his work will be useless because of this fly-by-night decision? I mean, what are you basing that on in history? Let's look at what efficient governments have been able to do. Let's not look at ours. Let's look at one that's been efficient. China. Now, they're efficient. They get things done. If they want to take people's land away, they just take it away, move them around, do whatever they want to do. You have some ideas that they don't find productive. They just kill you and you never heard from them again. They do what they want to do there. They don't have to worry about messy things like votes. Let's look at what they've been able to do to Christianity. They have tried to wipe it out for 55 years. They've tried to regulate it and destroy it for 55 years. After 55 years of communism in China, there are 65 million registered communists in China today. The smallest count that anybody's willing to put in print, there are 135 million Christians. I will make you a threshing sledge. And no one will stand in your way. Do not make your decisions out of fear. I want you to feel the faithlessness, the absolute faithlessness of making decisions out of fear. And I mean that with everything in me. Make your decisions for your children that are right. Do what is right for them, but don't do it out of fear. Don't do it out of fear. You can send your kids to public school. They are never going to set foot on an inch of ground that doesn't belong to Jesus Christ. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be afraid. Humans have been trying for 10,000 years to stand up in front of God and put their fist in his face, and they haven't won yet. He's undefeated. That's not going to change. I will make you a threshing sledge. You don't have to be afraid. I wish somebody had told me that 20 years ago. I lived my entire time in college. I was afraid. I was the only one who had my opinions, I thought. And I was afraid. Do not fear. I am with you. Do not be dismayed. Do not look around anxiously. Look at me. I am your God. I will be with you. I will sustain you. I will strengthen you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Please pray with me. Father, we believe that you loved us enough to give us your Son. But we don't believe that you love us enough to protect our children. We don't believe that you love us enough to provide for our families. We don't believe that you love us enough that whether you call us, when you call us through sickness, you're going to bless the world through that. Lord, we just don't believe you love us enough to take care of us.